Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This edition of The Standard is brought to you by the AXA Startup Angel Competition. I'm Sharmadine Reed, founder and CEO of The Stack World, and I'm here to help you turn your business dream into reality. There are 6 chances to win the competition, including 2 top prizes of £25,000, mentoring from myself and leading UK founders, plus business insurance for a year thanks to AXA. Go to standard.co.uk/AXA Startup Angel for details on how to enter and complete your entry by the 2nd of June 2024. Good luck.
From the Evening Standard in London, I'm Mark Blunden and this is The Standard.
Situations like this can bring home that realisation of what the price of lose-lose really is in human terms. We're seeing that the levels of polarisation and tension in the school and also the levels of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia reduce over time.
Protest tents are popping up at London universities following student encampments in the US set up in opposition to Israel over its war against Hamas in Gaza. But there are concerns. The flashpoint violence we've seen at august academic institutions, including UCLA and Columbia, could spread here. Pro-Palestinian protest camps have been set up by students at more than a dozen universities across the UK, including Cambridge and Oxford, as well as Goldsmiths College, UCL and SOAS in London. It comes as the Education Secretary, Gillian Keegan, joins the Prime Minister in urging vice-chancellors to crack down on anti-Semitic abuse on campuses and create a safe environment for all students. Whether you see these protests as pro-Palestine or anti-Israel, there doesn't appear to be much measured discussion on this ever-divisive topic going on. Or is that true? Because in this edition of The Standard podcast, we'll speak with a London charity that aims to bridge the chasm through dialogue, listening, understanding and critical thinking, including inviting young Israeli and Palestinian speakers to help educate 14 to 18 year olds across the capital. Now we're joined by Sharon Booth, founder of Camden-based Solutions Not Sides, which was founded in 2010, who says they're busier than ever with demand from schools across the capital, and she explains the objective of their work.
The main objective of what we're doing is that young people need and deserve safe and brave spaces to learn about and discuss global issues that are important to them. And so that's our aim. And we believe that it's of paramount importance that we don't shut down this topic in schools, which is our main kind of space that we operate in, if we want to fulfil our responsibility to educate students to become active and effective future citizens. Our education programme is designed to be politically impartial. The main point about it is that it gives students the chance to have dialogue face to face with their peers from Palestine and Israel. Active listening basically means that you are really truly listening and you're not thinking about what you're going to say next, and you're not allowing emotions to kind of override your ability to be rational and to take on board what someone else is saying. So we have a program that is based around 3 E's: exploration, empathy and empowerment. And in exploration, the students engage with some of the historical narratives around this issue and listening to both sides. In empathy, they listen to personal stories of the 2 speakers from Israel and Palestine. And in empowerment, they do a workshop looking at the potential solutions for the situation and what a win-win outcome could look like.
What is a safe and brave space?
We feel that there's 2 things that are in balance here, which are at the heart of some of the issues we've been seeing in our schools on having discussions around this. One is the need for free speech and the fact that people have a need and a right to express their views and to learn from one another what their views are. That's the brave space that we have that opportunity to speak up. But at the same time, there's an issue around safe spaces, because there's a need amongst some people and an anxiety, I think, about some of the language that is used and some of the attitudes that come into those conversations. So we want to make sure that people feel safe in that they're not going to feel threatened or attacked or somehow have have their identity undermined. But at the same time, we want everyone to feel that they can also speak their views freely. So we have to hold that space and educate people around how we have those conversations.
And how are pupils on all sides of the debate reacting to your workshops and concepts?
They come into the room very often with quite strong opinions, strong emotions around this issue. And I would say that the presence of the two young people from Palestine and Israel really models for them what active listening looks like and what that kind of brave dialogue and respectful disagreement looks like. And because those two individuals are so practiced in this, they've been obviously doing this dialogue work back in the Middle East, because they're so practiced at it, they are able to bring that sense of reassurance, and the students can follow the lead of these two individuals. And so that really helps put a framework in place for the sessions that the students can operate within.
What's the reason that people sometimes struggle to listen actively?
One of those things is a fear that by listening to another point of view, you're somehow legitimizing it. And in SNS, we make clear that education is about listening in order to understand and explain why someone has a certain perspective, but not to excuse or justify the other point of view. And active listening can actually be a very good thing that's in your own interest as well, because if you have really truly heard someone else, such knowledge is empowering. If you want to go on and make a difference or change a situation. So we would always say that the point of dialogue is not to reconcile opinions or to agree with one another, but it's to gain insight into what is going on socially, emotionally, and conceptually, so that we can then know how to act.
Let's go to the ads. Coming up, could active listening and dialogue help lessen tensions on campus? Why not hit follow in the meantime and give us a rating?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back. Sharon, have you had any successes in bridging the divide?
Yeah, so one of the projects that we're doing in the schools is called our Olive Branch Award for Schools. And this has been a really good way of working more long-term in schools. And we're seeing when schools sign up for a minimum of 3 years or more with us through the Olive Branch Award, we're seeing that the levels of polarization and tension in the school and also the levels of anti-Semitism, Islamophobia reduce over time. And at the same time, and this is again going back to that balance between freedom of speech, but also community cohesion, at the same time, we're finding that people are more confident and are able to talk about this, whether it's students or teachers, that they're freely having these discussions. And what makes them more confident is because they do have some grounding in understanding where people who hold different viewpoints are coming from and therefore what language they should use. So yeah, I think over time, as a whole institution, we're seeing the school communities start to handle this with respect, but also with confidence.
And how has demand for your services changed since the October the 7th attacks?
We've seen a lot more demand. We've had to expand our staff team as a result so that we can try and deliver to meet as much of that demand as we can. And it's been demand not just for the education programme that I've outlined, which involves those sessions with the Israeli and Palestinian speakers. It's not just that demand, it's also demand for our teacher training sessions around tackling and recognising anti-Semitism, Islamophobia around this topic, and also demand for our resources. We've had our assembly pack has been downloaded and used around 4,000 times since October the 7th. So it's certainly been a massive increase in demand for our work. And the nature of our programme remains the same, but the content of what we're discussing obviously is very specific to the events that have been happening in the region in the last few months. And we've had to put some extra measures in place for our team and for our Israeli-Palestinian speakers to support them, because obviously this is traumatic, not only for the students, but also it's very difficult for our team at times. So it's certainly become a lot more challenging. But I think there's also been an increase in a kind of a need to empathize with one another as things are getting more difficult. Polarization is increasing, but there are individuals who are really starting to realize one of our main principles that we teach in sessions, which is that if a situation of win-lose continues, where, you know, there's an aim that one side wins and the other loses, we all end up at lose-lose. And I think situations like this can bring home that realization of what the price of lose-lose really is in human terms. And so therefore, the willingness to have conversations about what win-win could look like, that can also increase at times like this. And we are seeing that too, which is encouraging.
Finally, what's your view on improving dialogue on university campuses right now amid these rising tensions?
It's going back to this issue of balance. I think it would be the same for the universities as for the schools. And ultimately, people should have the freedom to protest. I don't think freedom of protest should be shut down in universities, but freedom of speech and protest should be balanced with the need to ensure that hatred is not tolerated in our society and that we maintain campus cohesion. So I think this means that any protest, whether on campus or anywhere else, first of all, it should be clear in its stated aims. I think some of the protests are, some of them could do better with that. And its messaging should always be free from racist tropes, stereotypes that demonize whole groups of people. And I think the protest should not be directed at certain groups of people in our society. So it shouldn't be assumed, for example, that a particular faith or cultural group here in Britain all share the same political opinions, or that they're somehow responsible for political events that are happening thousands of miles away. And this is part of the problem, so that sometimes those protests are being directed towards particular groups of people. They're using certain stereotypes and tropes that demonize those groups. And I think the way to resolve it is that, I mean, ultimately dialogue needs to happen between those who wish to protest and those who have concerns about any particular language or messaging that may cross those lines. So that dialogue needs to happen so that people on both sides of that equation have their needs met.
There's more on this story in the Evening Standard newspaper and online at standard.co.uk. We're back on Friday at 4 p.m.